It's a caress of cotton and ice, the softest eternal vice, like darkness behind my eyes. Breaths of forgotten and numb, the tongue grows thick and dumb, the spine grows slack and loose. And then everything is nothing more. Life fades away to some distant shore. It's all so far from me now. Like a warm blanket come the dreams, to whisper many things, safe and small until I wake again. The scrolls of the poet Corinthus on the Leaf of Dreams, AD 68.
Is a world forged by demons but stolen by dragons. Four heroes have banded together to ensure ancient evils do not reclaim their creation. Episode 7, A Pirate's Life for Me.
Kelchips, I love you.
So the sky itself rubs against your skin like gravel, the force of the fall stretching your face painfully tight over the frame that is your skull. You go deaf to everything but the wind howling in your ears, creating a cocoon of white-hot noise that threatens to overwhelm your brain.
Jeez.
Your vision starts to tinge red, and you can feel your every limb clamped painfully tight as the adrenaline surges through your body and mind. Everything slows down, your life hanging on a hair's edge, as you look for anything at all that could break your fall, but you're too far from the cliffside. The ground below is coming into sharper and sharper perspective. You always thought you'd die at sea, your body tossed into the waves, your spirit enveloped by the ocean you knew and loved. Instead, there's a sea of hot, uncaring sand expecting your impact, waiting to bleach your bones and leave you forgotten. And for a moment, that seems like a comforting thought. It's not for Cordo, however. You grit your teeth and put your eyes toward the only landmark hidden in the desert, the ruined tower. You twist and turn your body, trying to edge it ever closer to the monument of some old forgotten civilization, not sure what your plan is when you get there. The distance seems impossible. It's then that you feel the impact. Something slams into you from above, knocking the wind from your lungs. Before you can recover from the surprise, arms have wrapped themselves around you, coming underneath your armpits and clasped in a death grip around your chest. The fingers are the color of midnight, a blackish gray tinged blue. If any doubt lingered in your mind, it is dispelled when you hear the drow's voice screaming against the wind to reach your ears.
Go limp, human.
Reluctantly, Cordo complies.
So, as you do, you loosen in his arms, and he wraps his legs around you as well to give a little extra bracing. And inexplicably, your descent starts to slow. You feel gravity pull strong against you, threatening to rip you from the limbs of the drow, but he holds tight. For a moment, you're no longer falling at all, just hovering motionless about 50 feet off the ground. And then slowly your descent begins again. In moments you're laying on the desert floor, Jakir lying on his back beside you, panting. In the distance looms the tower, or at least its remains. Once much taller, the top half of the tower lane strewn out across the desert. The new top floor lays open to the sky, its walls only partially intact. And just a reminder, it's nighttime. This all started at dusk, so the sun has definitely set now.
Okay. Jakir, what was that about? Why didn't you let me fall?
He laughs for a moment and pulls himself to a sitting position.
Easy. Unfortunately, I've lost my hostage.
Ah, crap.
Congratulations, Cordo. You're now my key to the stone.
I hope you realize I'm not going to comply easily with this.
One of his hands rests loosely on the hilt of one of his swords.
I thought as much. There are options. We could fight. One of us would live, one of us would not. How sure are you that it would be yourself that wins?
Well, not very sure. But I know that I would hardly live with myself if I just became a pawn to your evil machinations.
Evil machinations. So high and mighty. Well, perhaps you should consider it. I don't think the elf would want to give me the stone for your body.
Yeah, but on the other hand, and then Cordo turns and just starts sprinting towards the tower.
Damn you!
He yells as he clambers to his feet and follows hot on your heels. So your legs pump furiously across the desert, sinking into the sand with each step, just not getting the traction you want to get. And you can hear him close behind you on your trail. Roll a dexterity check.
All right, success.
So you have stumbled for a moment, but keep to your feet. Jake here keeping pace behind you, and he may be gaining, you're not sure.
Okay. We're not going to waste energy by looking behind.
Okay, roll a constitution check.
Right. Okay, well, fail.
Alright, Jakir succeeds. So you're about halfway to the tower when your legs start feeling heavy. You're having trouble keeping your pace. The sheer act of falling seemingly took a lot out of you as you strained every muscle. You feel his fingers brush against your back as you're almost within reach, and that spurs you forward a little more. Both of you just driving as hard as you can across the desert. You stop for a moment because the sky is split with a very familiar sound. A loud screeching roar, and instinctively you turn behind to look, and you see emerging from the sand, maybe 20 yards behind you both, another dragon. Brown, wingless, larger than the first. Perhaps about 50% bigger. And it spots you. There's blood dripping down its maw, and what you can only imagine to be horse flesh hanging from it. You see Jake here is, you know, has done the same thing you did, looked instinctively back, and his head whips around to face you, and he just yells,
"Run!"
Which Cordo does with enthusiasm.
So both of you take off now, full sprint toward the tower. And your brain has committed to this. It is fight or flight, and you are flighting.
Mm-hmm. While they're running, Cordo is going to try to throw something at the drow to trip him up. Because you don't have to outrun the bear, you just have to outrun the other guy trying to outrun the bear.
What are you throwing?
Let's look at my inventory. I figure something that's probably going to be like near the top of my pack or something. I have a bag of tobacco. I don't know, that's not going to do anything. Oh, shit. I have my rope and grappling hook. Like, I can't do a full-on lasso cowboy throw, but I can at least just throw a bundle of rope at him.
Yeah, just sure, especially with a grappling hook attached. That has weight.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead and make an attack roll with whatever your penalty is for being non-proficient in something.
That looks
like a one.
Critical fail, yep.
You reach back awkwardly into your pack, trying not to slow down at all to grab the grappling hook out. Make another dex check.
Oh, yeah. Dex check success.
And you drop the rope, and it tangles around your feet for a moment. You manage to kick it free pretty quickly and keep running, but it almost took you down with it. Jake here and the dragon has gotten a little closer, and the ground shakes around you. You steal another glance over your shoulder to see the dragon diving into the sand itself, going underneath the ground.
Oh, God. Cordo cuts right.
You cut right just in time as its head pops up above the ground right where you were, clamping in the empty air. You head back toward the tower again right after. You see Jake here diving out of the way of a claw and rolling back up onto his feet and running. And you reach the precipice of the tower.
Mm-hmm.
You vault up the stairs and throw open the door. And you see the entranceway. Do you enter the tower?
Yeah. I see that I have very little choice.
You run into the tower. It's a heavy wooden door, and there is a large beam on the floor. Also inside the round room of the tower, there is a stone fireplace against the east wall.
Okay.
Mounds of garbage are strewn across the floor, as it looks like this place wasn't used for a long time. In the center of the room is a trap door. There's no concealment over it at all, so there's no doubt that it's there. On the opposite end of there is a desk looking cluttered with all sorts of ornaments. Ornaments and ottomans. Mm-hmm. And then behind it, as it's pressed up against a wall, seems to be a door.
Hmm. Trap door, desk, door behind it. I guess, what's this big pile of stuff?
The garbage?
Yeah, garbage. Is it just a big, huge pile of garbage?
That's what it looks like.
All right. Here's what Cordo's going to do. He's going to run to the trap door and give it a big tug. And then he's going to run around and jump in the pile of garbage.
You pause for just a moment, taking in the room. And you run to the trap door in a moment, yanking it open. You immediately dart off to your left and dive into this garbage heap, which smells like rot and decay. A split moment later, the drow vaults into the room. The very foundation of the tower shakes as the dragon slams its bulk onto it from the outside. Small stones let loose from the ceiling above you and shower down, gashing your skin and drawing thin streaks of blood.
Mm.
Then for a moment, all is silent. The drow's head darts left and right. He says something in his native tongue, which you imagine can only be a curse. He slams the door shut, stoops to the ground, and attempts to lift the beam to bar the door.
Oh, man. Can Cordo gauge whether this door is less than dragon-sized?
It is less than dragon-sized, but you also know that dragons all have the innate ability to shapeshift into a humanoid creature.
Oh, God. You know, this kind of comes down to a character thing. Cordo is calculating enough to let this drow struggle and fail.
Oh, god damn it.
Yeah. Cordo's gonna let this happen. In fact, he tries to burrow himself deeper into the garbage while the drow is grunting and making noise lifting this thing.
So he succeeds. He yanks one edge of the beam off the ground and, using the other as a pivot, spins it toward the door and rests it on the latch. Using that as a fulcrum, he stoops down again to pick up the part that's on the ground and, with a grunt, yanks it off the ground, and the weight of the beam on the other side slams it into the place across the door. And just in time, as the door slams and smashes into the beam, he slumps on the ground, his back to the wall, panting and tired.
Are you there, human?
Yep. Cordo holds his breath, peeking out between the garbage to try to keep an eye on this drow.
So his eyes scan the room, and for a moment you think they're looking at you, but then they settle on the trapdoor. He slowly makes his way across the floor. Cautiously, he pulls his bow off of his shoulder and knocks one arrow. He kneels down by the open trapdoor and peers downward. So now that the door is shut, it's completely dark in there. There's no light. You hear him mutter the same curse again, and then it goes silent, aside from the occasional shuffling noise in his direction.
Shuffling, huh?
As if someone, like, crouching, adjusting their stance, things like that.
Can Cordo make a detect noise check to see if it sounds like he's moving down the ladder?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why did I not put more points into detect noise? All right, I failed that check.
The noise is pretty evident, but you can't tell what it is or what he's doing. He speaks, but quietly.
If you can hear me, human, we are not alone. There are things beneath us, something bestial. Also, you should know that the garbage you're laying in isn't that warm. Drow spent centuries underground, human. We know how to see the heat and the cold.
All right, fine. Cordo starts climbing out of the pile, probably awkwardly. Well, it was worth a try, you evil bastard.
Again, you call me evil. What have I done to make you think so?
You've captured my friends and allies, and you seek a power that is intrinsically corruptive.
And you do not?
We seek to contain this power. We've gone to great lengths to not use it ourselves.
And this is what you think, that I would use it for myself?
Well, yeah. Basically, we are not using it. Anyone else who took it would be trying to use it. Therefore, we're the only ones who are going to not use it.
I don't know that your logic holds.
You hear the trapdoor slowly shut.
Why do you think that I'm here?
To be honest, I assume you just want to command a loyal and vicious army to do your bidding.
If you know where I can find one. So you believe that my tribe came above the ground to find a loyal and vicious army to do our bidding?
Well, I know of drow. You may be vicious, but you value your own lives. Why throw yours away when you can throw others into the meat grinder?
So a mere 200 of us fled the Underdark and came to this harsh land of endless sun to raise an army at the edge of civilization.
Well, then what's your story, drow? If I'm wrong, what's the truth?
You hear a little bit of striking. Clink, 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 and then the dim light of a torch comes into view. He seems to purposely be keeping it from burning too fast, trying to keep the light dim. But you can see the room again. He sits cross-legged by the trapdoor.
Our tribe are outcasts. We left the Underdark. Perhaps fled would be more appropriate. Our leader is Varuna, venerable drow. He was a longtime servant and consort to Briennethal of House Argoth. She is the matron of the house and subjected him and the other males to, let's say, harsh treatment. He is part of the lower caste of drow. Yes, not all drow are created equal, believe it or not. He had a wife, however, and 12 children, and those children had children themselves, all of which bred as fodder for the drow wars amongst themselves or amongst the dwarves or against anyone else they may pick. Though in time, Brennethal became jealous that her consort had a wife, so had Bale killed, so that Varuna would be all hers. It didn't work out the way she thought. It spurred his family into battle and started a slave revolt. Slaves from other families flocked to join him. Myself, I was released from the dungeons, as were many of us, to join in the fight. It was not enough, however. We were losing. Varuna gathered those of us he could, and we fled until we came to the surface world. Now here we are.
Okay. So you and your tribe of drow are outcasts, after a fashion.
We roam Kalorn without any true home.
Why do you seek the Ashstone?
That is more than you need to know, human. It appears it's in our best interest to ally together for the time being. I know not what this tower is, but it feels sinister.
It is a bit creepy, I'll grant you.
Well, what do you suggest?
Perhaps there is another way out?
Okay. I noticed behind this desk there seems to be a door. Perhaps it would lead to some stairs or something. You said there were some creepy, crawly things down below, right?
I do not recognize them. They seem to walk on two legs. So what do you say, human? Where do we go?
Well, let's go through this door behind this desk and see where it leads. It seems we have few other options.
All right, so he makes his way to one side of the desk. And between the two of you, you manage to drag it across the floor. The sound of wood grating on stone filling the room, though you both try and lift as much as possible, so that's not a thing. Mm-hmm. You see all a matter of ornaments stretched out across the deck. Inkwells, broken shards of glass, a rolled up piece of paper or two.
Oh, rolled up piece of paper. Yeah, Cordo's gonna grab those.
Never know what kind of tidbits you'll find on rolled up pieces of paper.
So you toss those in your sack, and the door lays before you, unhindered.
All right, Cordo opens the door.
There is a stairwell that curls up. Looks like it goes around the outside of the room, going upward and around it.
All right. Goes up, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jakir. I feel like, since we're already on the ground floor of a desert, going up isn't going to provide us much many options in leaving this place.
So then you would suggest we go down?
I hate to say it, but at least possibly down will lead us into some tunnels or something that would give us an escape from this place.
I imagine to do so would mean a fight. Are you ready for that?
Cordo runs his fingertips across the hilt of his quick draw saber and says, I'm always ready for a fight.
Then it seems we truly are allies for now.
It seems so.
You're both by the trapdoor. He has his bow drawn. You have your sabers.
Yep.
What's next?
All right, we're going to pull this trap door open again. Cordo gives it a good old tug.
And it easily opens.
Yeah.
There's no stiffness or creakiness. It seems that it has been in... It has been in use.
Okay.
As the dim torchlight floods into the room below you, you hear shrieking and hissing.
Shrieking and hissing. All right, says Cordo. There's nowhere to go but down. And probably still smelling like garbage, he jumps down the hole.
Make a tumbling check, if you would.
Oh, yeah. Ah! Failed dexterity check. Oh, God.
You leap. You leap heroically from the top of the trapdoor. You hit the floor and just fall. You do not land well. You don't hurt yourself other than like some superficial bruising, but you do land prone.
Prone, yeah.
The torch lands beside you, and you can see the drow climbing down the rope ladder above you. There's one door in the room. There's a few ratty skins laid out on the floor that look like they're for sleeping. Single wooden table covered in mugs and dirty, filthy dishes.
Mm-hmm.
A little lounge in the corner. More garbage. Always more garbage littering the floors. But the thing that really makes the room notable are the three beings in it.
Mm-hmm.
They're grotesque. They're humanoid. And they look somewhat like you imagine a brown half-dragon would look after seeing the brown dragons outside. But their scales are molted in some places, showing bare skin. One of them has like a stumpy limb. The other one is like back is severely bent. They just look mutated one and all. And the largest one has wings sprouting out of its back as well. So let's roll initiative.
Oh man. Cordo did not think this through.
Okay, despite landing flat on your back on the floor of this cavern, or on the floor of this room in the tower, Cordo, you're up.
He gets up, taking his sabers with him.
I think that's gonna... Getting up will probably cost you movement action.
Now seems like a prime time for some dart action. So yeah, he stands up, brushes himself off, says, "Hello, gentlemen," and then just starts throwing darts.
All right, the first of these deformed, dragonish men starts bounding toward you. His front arms go on a table, and he starts running on all fours over the table up to you. Who are you throwing it at?
This guy.
Okay.
All right.
Before he even has a chance to react, your dart sinks into him, the entire tip going in, and he hisses in rage. The larger one with the wings bounce toward you as well. First one that rushed you swipes with a claw, of which you easily duck under, watching its broken talons swing above your head. And you're up again.
Alright, last dart this round.
And as you duck, you sidearm that last dart, slamming it into that dragon man. And again, before he even got a chance to recover from the first dart, before he got a chance to move toward you or even realize you were actually in the room, he goes down.
Yeah.
Two darts protruding from his abdomen. The winged one takes its great maws and tries to palm your head from either side and rake it with its claws. You won't have any of that. You just swing your head to the side, thrusting your shoulder up. And instead of getting your head, it slides off your shoulder harmlessly. At which point you hear the string of Jaikir's bow being drawn back.
Yeah. Time to draw work for me, finally.
Alright, so you hear that string, once it's drawn, snap taut. And an arrow flies down into the beast below you. Right into its head.
Nice.
Like, from the top down. And its eyes, like, roll in its sockets and look at you for just a moment before it just falls backwards. Jaikir lands on top of the body and quickly lets loose a second shot, which misses, shooting toward the east of this monstrosity, which you have to jump to one side to avoid it as it flies past you. So Jaikir goes to knock another arrow in the bow and goes to draw it back, and it has become tangled around the wing of the beast that he is currently standing on. He curses in frustration again, drops the bow, and draws his two swords. So the beast beside you yells in a hissing voice,
"Alcar! You're under attack!" Uh-oh. That's not good.
And again, it's going to try and maul you with its claws. It's going to get you before you get a chance to do anything about it.
Ooh.
And he rakes it heavily across your ribs, sending pieces of you going across the room, hitting you for 8 points of damage.
Youchies.
Alright, Cordo.
Alright. Well, Cordo, after yelling in pain... Oh, man. He doesn't have his sabers in his hands because he was throwing darts last round. But luckily, he is also a puncher. And so in reaction to being raked across himself, he's going to twist around and throw a nice hook across this thing's knobbly protruding jaw. Bah!
So oh, that's not enough. The plus two?
Yep, that's with the plus two.
So your right hook comes speeding around your body as a natural reaction to getting smashed. And as a natural reaction to having a fist thrown at its face, it weaves to the left, and your fist just barely grazes its face. Not enough to cause it any damage at all, like the lightest of taps. However, Jaikir uses that opportunity to try and strike it from behind with one of his swords. Oh, yeah, that's a crit.
Yeah, it sure is.
So yeah, your right fist grazes its face as it weaves to the left. And Jaikir brings his first Sapara, the sword with the half crescent moon at the end that he carries, comes swinging around from the left of it. So the beast is moving toward the sword. And the curve of it catches right around his waist and cleaves into it, stopping it dead in its track. And as the beast turns, screaming, he swings his other sword with his other hand. And the curve of it acts just a little bit like an axe, bringing a little weight and heft to its slash. And he brings it down from above his head, carving it deeply into the collarbone and getting to about the sternum before the slash stops.
Damn.
He falls over dead, Jaikir kicking it off his swords. He spins them both around once in his hands, sending a splatter of blood going off before putting them back on the hangers he carries at his hips and going over to retrieve his bow from the tangled wing.
It is probably best that we are not fighting against each other, Jaikir.
At the moment.
He says, pretty unmoved.
Believe it or not, I don't have any wish to harm you.
I choose not. Can't help but remembering that this last beast managed to yell out a warning. Sounds like we may have company.
I imagine there are more floors downward.
Roll percentile. He finishes that statement with,
"We'll have to wonder if they were able to hear him."
Yeah.
And you roll a 17 out of 100, just to put that in perspective.
Before they move on, Cordo goes over to this weird looking piece of furniture and examines it.
At one point, it looks to have been made out of rare woods and rich cloth. The padding has since been pretty much destroyed. There's tears in it. It looks damaged from moisture, like spills on it, even though it's in the middle of the desert. At one point in time, you have no doubt that it must have been nice, but with these creatures living in here, it seems to have not lasted.
Their scales are brown like the worm outside.
You know, Jake here, examining the one that had wings.
Fascinating. Do you think they may be his offspring?
Perhaps. I've never heard of a brown dragon.
Me neither. There's so many colors of dragon.
Being as we don't have company yet, I think perhaps we're safe.
Shall we proceed downward? I don't see any trap doors.
He points toward the door at the end of the room.
Perhaps another staircase? I'd prefer it to dropping down like this one.
You know, funnily enough, me too.
He walks over to the table and picks up one of the steins and gives a sniff. His face puckers and he puts it back down.
What is it?
I'm not sure, but it's not something I want to drink. It smells sour.
Yeah, let's avoid that.
So then we continue downward?
Yep, that's what we do.
So you open the door and there is indeed another stairwell curving around the outside that goes down. Jake here picks up the dim torch and carries it with you, providing enough light to see just slightly in front of yourselves. When you reach the bottom of the stairwell, there is another door.
Shakir, you should draw your bow, and I'll kick this door open. If anything's right on the other side, you should shoot at it.
He does so, and he knocks an arrow, pulling the bowstring tight. Because he's specialized, this actually gives Shakir a free shot. So you kick open the door, and Shakir looses a shot. It goes wide. He tries to shoot the one right over the pile of garbage who was like bent over, maybe rummaging around in it. It's hard to say.
Okay.
But the arrow just skitters across the stone floor, missing him. Go ahead and roll 1d10 for surprise.
I rolled a 4.
So they are not going to be surprised, so everyone's just going to roll initiative.
All right.
So one of these beasts that was over by the shelves on the one side of the room wheels and immediately runs towards you. The garbage will count as difficult terrain.
Okay.
He doesn't quite reach you, but he's running full tilt across the floor.
Okay, cool. Then he's just going to run up and slash at him with his saber. That's fine.
Okay, Cordo, you're actually moving before anyone else does.
Oh, sweet. Gotta live the quick draw. Blast.
So it flashes out of its scabbard and comes dangerously close to catching the half-dragon in front of you. It draws a thin line of blood across his chest as he leans backwards to avoid the strike. The one in the room with wings beats them just a few times, propelling it off the ground, sailing over the mountain of garbage and landing before Jake here with a hiss. The one that Jake here originally fired at comes bounding around the pile of garbage around the far side. So the one that flew over the garbage swings wildly at Jake here. He, as he's notching his arrow, twists his body to the side to put the bow between him and the beast, using it to ward off its claw.
Nice.
And then that the large brute in the back of the room starts lumbering toward you. And tromps into garbage.
Just starts, like, wading through it.
Yeah. And it's slowing it down, but it just doesn't care. There's something different about the way this one moves. And while you see it has wings, they seem to be ornamental at best. Twisted, small, there's no way that they're lifting the bulk of that off the ground. It certainly seems like an evolutionary mistake, but then again, looking at these beasts, all of them seem a little bit like evolutionary mistakes. Cordo.
All right.
With your saber in your other hand.
Yeah, my other saber. Gonna take this guy down one way or another. There we go.
or at least do some damage one way or the other.
Okay, so that's going to hit it. So you thrust forward with this saber, smashing it against the torso of the creature in front of you, sending flecks of blood spilling onto the ground. It stumbles backwards, grabbing its side. And if it could pale, it would be now. Jaqir, who has been moving remarkably slow during these battles,
yeah,
uses his arrow at the winged one right in front of him. Ugh. And it's through the beast's own flailing, smacks the bow while he's shooting, and the arrow bounces off the ground at his feet. He uses his foot to kick himself backwards just a little bit, giving him just enough room to shoot off his second arrow for the round.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting an arrow directly through its sternum.
Nice.
The tip of which is just barely sticking on the back. It's gasping wetly, and you can hear it directly behind you. Kind of what you know to be the sound of it gargling its own blood as it seeps into its lungs. It falls to the ground into the garbage heap, continuing to gasp. And you know that it won't be long now until it's ended.
Nice.
And Jaqir does not lose a moment before knocking another arrow. Cordo.
Cordo's going to keep doing his... Yeah, he's going to keep doing his double saber stuff here. And as his quick one goes off, he's already cocking his wrist back to flick the other one at this guy.
And that's going to hit. So your wrist cocks back, but it's not going to hit that one because he falls as your second saber strike to him bites into his leg, taking his support out from underneath him.
Mm-hmm.
He falls to the ground, his blood pooling on the floor, and it's no doubt that he's going to bleed to death. There's nothing short of a godly miracle that could save him.
Right.
The brute stomps on his fallen compatriot.
God.
And readies itself to attack. Jaqir lets an arrow loose at it as it approaches. His arrow going underneath through its wing, tearing through the unfeeling membrane and going into the garbage pit behind it.
Mm.
Ordo.
Cordo is turning to face this behemoth.
And just as you turn to face him, his first claw, hanging at the end of a stubby but muscular arm, comes crashing back towards you and smashes into the ground as you step to the side, ready to take your counter strike with your saber. It does knock a few of the loose rocks out of the flagstones below you.
Damn, that thing is intense.
The smaller one goes flailing at Jaqir, who instead of dancing away from it, actually steps in deep enough that its flailing claws are useless, shoving a shoulder against its chest and sending it stumbling back a step. Cordo.
Cordo's gonna carve this dragon thing up like it's a rack of lamb. Let's do this.
Nah. And you almost do. Your saber swings toward its side, and it's not the world's greatest strike. And unfortunately, though you feel like it should have, it does not break the skin of this creature. It just smashes into it, doesn't seem to even notice that it happened. Jaqir, on the other hand, after shoving his arrow into the adversary by his side, lets loose an arrow, which sticks into the meat of its thigh, deep. Blood is trickling down its leg as it roars, ready to extract its revenge. Cordo.
Cordo is going to try and parry this claw with his quick draw saber. Just very standard, like, fencing thing to try to just, like, intercept the claw and slide it down.
Alright, and still the smaller one to Jaqir's side. Claw's just flailing ineffectively. Hampering the elf as he has to defend himself before he takes a shot, but doing him no harm.
All right, this is the parry. I hope this works. No, that did not work.
So it picks its claw off the ground where it smashed to it, and goes to swipe at you from the like a sidearm style, aiming for your torso.
Mm-hmm.
You start bringing the flat of your blade downward to slap its hand down and effectively out of the way. It's much too quick. you hit it with your wrist instead of the flat of your blade, doing absolutely nothing. However, doing so, you stepped in deeper than you were, so that its claws also miss you, and instead it hits your ribs with its wrist. So you're almost chest to chest with this mammoth beast right now, but none of you has damaged the other. Jaykir lets loose another arrow at it, and just isn't really far enough away to get the leverage needed to actually shoot it in.
Man, he's still doing all the damage on this thing so far.
Cordo.
Alright, this is his saber that he can actually attack with. Alright. That looks like a success to me. Having stepped in basically under this thing's guard, but being a little extended from the first saber strike, he's going to draw the second one from below, slashing up against this thing's chest and shoulders.
You bring your blade upward, almost having it at a right angle to the ground and parallel to yourself and the beast, with a very short distance between you. The blade doesn't really bite into it at first. It hits against the torso, and as you draw it up, it acts more like a serrated knife cutting bread than it does a chopping instrument, and just slices deep into it, and you hear a wet splash as you withdraw it up to top by its shoulder, as blood sprays all over you as close as you are, and also up toward the ceiling. It lets out a bellowing rage and tries to reach around your back with its other claw to bury its talons into your spine. Of which it does. You feel it just stab into the backside of you. You don't think it's hitting any major organs, but just pain shoots throughout your entire body as it tears what feels like a chunk of flesh out of you. You feel your own blood spray out as it moves its claw backwards and hits you for 9 points of damage.
Lordy. That one's gonna leave a mark, Cordo screams.
And Jaykir, trying to avoid you, lets loose a second arrow as the two of you are tangled together. And right at the moment he's letting it loose, as the two of you are pretty much bound together, you and the beast right now, its huge bulk towering over you, and you swing to the side, he gets slammed into by the beast himself and spins, instead shooting the smaller one that had been harassing him the entire time, and the arrow goes in one side of it and out the other, right through the meat of its shoulder, and it just, its eyes roll back up into its head and it falls over. It's just a very clean hole.
Cordo is just still not sold on really having this drow as an ally. So he's not going to be a huge dick about it. But he is going to disengage from this monster thing. Which puts him one square back, right?
Yes.
Alright. He's going to disengage and start fumbling at his pouch for a healing potion.
Alright, so after its claw comes out of your back, you push off of it with a sudden burst of strength. It doesn't move much, but you do propel yourself backwards, just out of its reach. You can still use your movement action if you'd like.
You know, I will back off a little bit. Thus endeth my turn.
Okay, so yeah, you disengage from the creature, moving back farther away from it to give yourself space. There's a volley of blows. Exchange between Jaykir and it.
Uh-huh.
Its claws swinging, Jaykir shooting an arrow, and Jaykir cannot find the penetration he needs with his arrows. He does catch a claw to his hip, which rakes through, and you hear him grunt in pain. Cordo, you're up.
Grab him that healing potion, and he's got one that's two-thirds full, and he's going to chug it down.
So, 2d8 plus 2.
Ta-da! Going to reroll that one?
Yes.
Alright. And
He's also going to move right behind the behemoth half-dragon.
Ouch, and quickly find a healing potion, pulling the cork off in your teeth, and you eye the two-thirds full bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Put the glass to your lips and slam it down your throat, and start moving toward the rear of the beast. You get behind it, and suddenly you're blinded.
Mm.
You can't see anything. And it lasts for but a moment as you blink, and the natural tears of your eyes start flushing out the blood that just got sprayed into them as an arrow went through the thing's neck and just sent a shower of blood at your face. You can see it now laying dead on the ground with you on one side and Jake here on the other, staring at each other across the expanse of its dead body.
Cordo wipes the blood off of his mouth with the back of his hand. I was just about to go in for the killing stroke there. That was some mighty fine dragon slaying.
Yes, well.
He starts looking at his random arrows and seeing what he can salvage.
I'll be honest, I thought I had lost my captive there for a moment.
Aye, well, I'd hate to deprive you of a good bargaining chip, I suppose.
Let me look at your back.
Cordo turns and exposes it to him, wincing a bit at the pain.
It appears that liquid is still doing its job. I can almost see itself knitting it together before me. Do you feel well enough to go on?
Aye. This should last me for another couple levels of this strange tower.
I can only wonder if there are more beasts like this above.
Aye.
He heads off to the right side of the room and starts inspecting the shelves.
Cordo goes to this, what looks like a chair and a little side table, and inspects that.
The chair is in a little better condition than the piece of furniture that's on the floor above you, but it still looks like it's past its glory days. Looks like it could probably be restored by a decent enough craftsman. The small table to the side of it has a single unlit candle and a leather-bound book with a strap around it, keeping it shut.
Really? Oh, man. Does the book say Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them?
It does not, oddly.
Well, he's still going to put it in his backpack.
All right, so you have a book and two scrolls.
Okay. And then after that, Cora's going to go to the left side shelves and start inspecting those.
So they seem to be a bit in disrepair. The one all the way to the right has a few books on it, and it looks like the other ones used to, but they're gone, as well as the shelves are gone off of them as well. There is a very crude drawing on the back of one of them that you make out depicting basically books being used in a fireplace.
Oh.
So you remember the fireplace you saw a few stories up, and can't help but wonder if they were keeping themselves warm on the colder nights. The ones that are left, with quick glance, isn't really anything of much note. One is what would be mostly like a gardening manual for somewhere that certainly isn't Quillorn.
Okay.
One has a few maps, but none that you hadn't seen before. So yeah, nothing important in that pile.
Okay. Interesting.
Good news, human.
Hi.
It looks like we might live.
Oh, cool. That's always good.
You see him with what is unmistakably a bottle of wine.
In the drow's hand?
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
I don't know about you, but I didn't think to get my rations and supplies before I fell.
I guess that's a good point. Yeah, I guess my rations were on my pack horse.
So amongst those shelves is a few bottles of like table wine, basically really low alcohol.
Okay.
But basically to like purify water to drink and keep, you know. There's one bottle of decent wine, a few things of aged cheese, of which the mold can be cut off, some hard tack. So basically the remnants of a pantry at some point that would equate to a total of 4 days of rations.
Oh, nice. All right, that's awesome.
So Jakir takes 2 days worth and leaves you the other two. He splits it fairly down the middle.
All right. That's nice of him, I guess. Still trying to hate this guy.
Did you find anything on the other side of the room?
Nothing useful. Just empty bookshelves and apparently a drawing depicting the fact that they had to burn the books to survive.
That is unfortunate. Do we go deeper into the belly of this place?
Yeah, I think we have to. I still think it's our best way of finding a way out.
Then lead us onward.
All right, onward then.
So when you open the next door, you're immediately greeted by a strong scent of something herbal. Like burning flowers or something, but it's pungent and strong.
Interesting. Like actively burning flowers?
Make a wisdom check.
That is a fail.
You're not sure.
Okay. Well, he's still walking through this doorway then.
So you make your way down the stairs, and much like the first, they curve downward around the outside of the building, and you reach another door, and the smell is certainly coming from the other side, and it's only intensified. There's also light coming from underneath the door that flickers like candles would.
Mm-hmm. All right, shall we do this again, Jakir? You want to knock an arrow, and I'll kick the door?
He glances at your back.
It worked so well the last time.
Indeed. All right, let's do it then.
So your foot pounds against the door, sending it swinging open, and you're not prepared for the sight that you see in front of you. There's all kinds of cushions and skins laying on the floor, atop of which many more of these beasts lay, unmoving. There's a few candles lit around the room, and you're just buffeted by smoke and the scent of burning flowers. In the middle, you see what looks to be a Delharoon. Not one you recognize by any means, but they're gaunt. Their ribs are poking through their skin, and they throw a handful of some sort of dust into this burning brazier in the middle. The brazier is about the size of a washing bowl, made of brass, and you can see runes etched around the outside of it. And while, yes, there's flame on the inside, the brazier itself almost seems to glow, and it catches your sight. The human looks up in surprise from its task. Some sort of cloth tied around its nose and mouth. Well, the human, the Delharoon, they're close.
Okay.
And its eyes just go wide.
Well, you don't look like a scary monster.
What are you doing here?
We found ourselves in some dire straits and had to escape a dragon.
But the Alcar, How did you escape them above?
Yeah, they're pretty dead right now.
They didn't escape us either.
Exactly.
You see his face start to moisten with tears. Roll a constitution check.
Okay. A failure.
He begins to openly weep and seems almost like a dream to you. The room has this soft, warmish glow to it. You feel comfortable, and the water around you is soothing. Like you're floating. And you suddenly feel shaken.
Oh, man.
What's wrong with you, man?
Jaikir has you by the cloth around your shoulder and is shaking you violently. It's the Bazir and flowers. The Delharoon runs across the room and comes back with a cloth in hand.
Cordo grabs it and puts it in front of his face. Although really the first time he sort of misses his face with it and then clamps it over and starts breathing through it.
His dream smoke. I think it was here before they came here.
I guess what does it do other than make me extremely woozy?
The Alkar, they found it and for days at a time would sleep down here. I don't know what they see. I don't know what they do. They made sure that I kept a constant supply burning, or they would kill me. And I am not the first they put at this task.
Wow. Well then this, where does the smoke go?
Most of it stays in this room. Please, can we go?
Yeah, stop burning this crap.
They have done terrible things to me.
Well, we can take you back to the Delharoon.
You know of my people?
Oh, I'm with a band of merchants who had to cross the desert. The Delharoon have been our guides for most of the way.
You notice Jaikir has just started coldly going between each of these creatures and using his sword is just slicing throats.
Ah.
And showing no emotion, no joy, no remorse while doing so.
Yeah. Sounds about right for a drow. Alright then. What else is in this room?
And that's pretty much about it. The Alkar, the brazier, and the skins and cushions and whatnot.
Alright.
There's no more doors or anything. This seems to be as deep as it goes.
Okay. Well, look, let's take some of this dream flower with us. Maybe we can, make some use of it.
It does not work on its own. You need the brazier.
I see. Well, then let's take the whole thing.
The trial just doesn't stop cutting necks. So it's on a stand. So the brazier itself is probably pretty hot, but you can grab it by the stand.
Ah, okay.
Well, then I think that's all of them.
You sure about that? You don't want to go around and maybe cut a couple of them twice?
I don't have that time to waste.
Okay.
He doesn't seem to get any mirth from the comment at all.
This has been the Isles of Samsaris. Theme song by Nick Coyle. Information on other music and sound effects can be found in the show notes. For more information on Samsaris and related projects, as well as information on booking game sessions, check out our website at www.crumblingkeep.com. Like Crumbling Keep on Facebook to keep up to date on Samsara's lore and episode releases. Want more? Donate to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/crumblingkeep. Afsana is played by Emily Cam. Cordo is played by David Thornton. Azelrath is played by Brad Kishbaugh, and Heskin is played by Frank Bolin. My name is James Crane, and I've been your Dungeon Master. Thanks for listening, and remember, fantasy is hardly an escape from reality. It's a way of understanding it.